access to number 11748. Riddle 9.
Fellow Ismail Khan, Riddle 9.
So, Subhash Chandra Bose had really put new life into this and gave them a degree of self-respect by his old reputation of having been the president of Indian Congress. But everybody in Malaya knew, and in Southeast Asia, that he was on the wrong side of Gandhi and Jawaharlal Nehru. Now, 1942, the agitation in India when started against the British, starting in Sindh with the Hur Rebellion, where they got the Pipagara and hung him and took his sons away and sent him to England and all that. In those days, when Nehru and Gandhi were giving the full blessing to the Quit India movement, Jinnah stood up and said that no, they were not supposed to make life miserable for the British now, and which will affect the war, their war effort. They are up against the wall. Let it not be said that we are taking mean advantage of their war with Germany. We shall not do anything. We put everything in the cold storage till the war ends. This was conveyed to us somehow by Chinese sources, by Indian sources, Muslim sources in Singapore. And I had an uncle there. In relationship, he was my father's first cousin. He had gone there, seconded to the Singapore Special Branch Police. Later, the Japs attacked. He was chief inspector in the Special Branch in Penang. He was in Singapore. He used to supply me with information and everything like that. But Japs hadn't touched him till then. He was quite underground with few very influential Indians in Singapore. He used to pass out information. And then when I was in the... He knew all these Indian National Army or senior officers too. When he was in Penang and Singapore, they were serving there. So he went to Mohan Singh. He knew Mohan Singh in Penang. He said, look, my nephew is locked up. If you could let me take him out. He said, take him out for as many days as you possibly as you want. When he came and picked me up from the concentration camp, I said, no, only 24 hours, no more. Because I did not want to get committed. So he took me out. First he gave me a lovely lunch. I sank about two or three bottles of beer. Then he took me for the night in an Indian Muslim's house from Punjab called Bashir Malal. He lived in a beautiful, magnificent villa in Singapore. So I had a comfortable bath and he gave me fresh clothes to wear, this sarong and baju. Quite a few leading Muslims came to see me there. A couple of Hindus came too. One was Raghavan, who became very prominent in the Indian National Army government. He was checking with me how we were treated, because Mohan Singh always said that he's treating us well. So after one night staying with them, next day I came back to my concentration camp, willingly. He said, look, Mohan Singh said to keep you out. I said, look, there is the thin edge of the wedge. He'll catch me. So what can I do? I said, I must be back in my camp. And there, I gave them a lot of information about conditions in the prisoner of war camps and Mohan Singh's lies. This thing had trickled to us in the camps by these sources that Jinnah did not want to embarrass the British, as opposed to Quit India movement by the Congress. And this had kept the Muslim morale up very high there, very high. That gave us a big handle to pump our troops against the Chinese Indian National Army. That thing trickled to us by the end of 42, actually. Now, when Bose came to our camp and gave a lecture, and he spoke very clean-cut Urdu, but with a Bengali accent thrown in for good measure. He said he wants blood for freedom of India. And Mr. Hitler had told him this, Mr. Tojo had told him this, And they're all with the, at our beck and call to fight the British on our behalf. Any one of you, those of you who would not join in this freedom fight, when they became successful in war, then they will send us all with third-class passage ticket in the ships and send us to our masters in Britain to wipe their boots and polish their boots for them. Is there any one of you here sitting there who cannot say yes or no to this? So I struggled to my bloody feet. We were sitting on the ground. I said, here I am. I'll go. I'll go. And I began to scream and shout, but everybody began to talk so much, my voice was drowned. You see? I said, yes, after what I've seen of you, I think I better get back to Britain to my masters. Hari Bhadwar and these people sitting behind me, they grabbed me and pulled me down. And they pinned me down. You see, for God's sake, don't show your face. During this lecture, I was smuggled out of the 2,500 men, and I was sent to my barrack to lie down, pretending I'm sick. He said, they come for you. So I laid there, and my orderly brought cold water packs to put on my head. They were looking for me. Who was the man? They said, we never saw him. Nobody. We were all sitting here, quietly. We were 2,500 that came. So, Subhas Chandra Bose, then he started weeding out people. Up to the time of his arrival in 1943, we had certain little lax rules about it. For example, one officer, five men, could go to the hospital for the day. We should leave camp, jump the buses and go. Our hospitals were 17 miles away, 16 miles away, 10 miles away. We had two hospitals, one in Karanji, everybody decent. So there we used to carry money. Now this, I'll come back to it later, how we survived. So we used to go out to the camps. When Bose came, and then into the bargain, we used to enter into mischief too. Go out, contact people, Chinese, for news, bring news out and things like that. We used to draw lots, as whose turn is there to go out this month. So one officer and five other ranks will go. Some VCOs and some NCOs and some men. He put a stop to that. He said, you chaps don't know, he told the Japanese. But Japanese said, they divide us into two lots. One the fighting troops, the Indian National Army, and one labor corps. We were the labor corps. We were the Shogoto Wallas, working units. He said, no, they are the worst swines. Don't give them any facilities. So from then onwards, we couldn't get out of the camp as easily as we could before. But then we used to hide and make excuses and slip through the barbed wire at the night, come back next morning and so on and so on. Then he stopped the INA officers also to have any truck with us. He said they sabotage each other, and much to the detriment of the Indian National Army. So he stopped that contact too. Then the INA chaps would come, our old friends, who were quite innocuous and harmless. They used to take us out, Hari Bhadwar and I used to go out with them, never as will come back. But that stopped too. So now we were. Then I heard the news that my uncle in relationship, this I told you about, the policeman, he was taken away. When he was living at the end of the Pyre Labor Road. And he used to have parties for us. So we used to go to this hospital parties. When we used to go, instead of going to the hospital, send our men there with a chit to the doctor that we are going away somewhere else. We join these men in so-and-so place. The men in NCOs would go, and we used to have a rendezvous and meet them when we used to go to this fellow's house. He used to have drink for us and food for us. He used to sing and dance and drink. A couple of young Chinese girls, Eurasian girls, they would come too. Pretty respectable lot. They would come too. And we used to dance around and go back. Go back, please, and punch. But that stopped too then. Then we settled down to. But still, the Red Cross parcels we never got. We never got any letters. Our letters are sent twice. I sent letters and we got letters about two or three times. 44, then my uncle disappeared. I heard that he's been taken away by the Japs. So I went in search of him from the fatigue party as you disappear, but couldn't find any clue about him. Finally, I discovered when the Japs came to visit me. And that very day, I had gone to work on a fatigue party from where I could escape, go out unobtrusively, and to contact this Indian Muslim gentleman called Bashir Malal to ask him if he had found anything about my uncle. Just before that, the Japanese arrived in a staff car, Jap guards from our camp. He said, "You are wanted in the camp." And I knew that I had had it that day. So the Jap NCO came, walked into this thing where we were working, my men and I. He came and said, "You're wanted in the camp." So I got in the car, went in with him, and back to our camp. At the gate, we were met by Korean guards who were guarding us along with Sikhs. The Korean guards took me to the commandant's residence and office across the road on Senangun Road, going to Paya Lebar. As I got there, they took me to a small room. There was a, in civilians, in a white bush shirt and khaki trousers, long-haired Japanese, with an interpreter who was a Korean, sitting there. They said, "We want to ask you some questions." So I sat down, and that day I'd gone with a blue pair of trousers and white shirt and wore my raincoat over it, because I was going to drop the raincoat and white shirt and blue trousers, and I should disappear out of the town to look for that man. Since it didn't, so I had my raincoat on. So what I did was, in order to look more business-like, coming back from a working party, I took my raincoat off and took my shirt off with it too, and dropped it in the hall. So I had a T-shirt, kind of a singlet with half sleeves, and my blue trousers, drill trousers, like jeans or something. So he pushed a packet of cigarettes at me, smoked a cigarette, so I took a cigarette, puffed it. Rare occasion to smoke. So he began to question me, where was I born, where was I educated? Was my father English? No. Was your mother English? No. Your grandmother, grandfather, but no English blood in me. So I told him I'm from Afghanistan, as I told you, and you're living in Peshawar, and so on and so forth. Education, army. What was my last job at the time of surrender? I said, in battalion intelligence officer. That God is very good. They were intelligence Kempothai. Kempothai was the most feared name like Gestapo. So they're questioning and I'm answering. "Have you got any relations there? Do you know any civilians there?" "So yeah, I've got a relation here." "What is he to you?" "I said, he's my father's first cousin. My father's uncle's son. So he's my second cousin." That created more confusion for my poor bloody uncle. He kept on saying, "He's my uncle, I'm his nephew." So uncle is brothers, you know. So you were writing down, the other friend writing down. He was alone, he puffing cigarettes, pushing a packet of cigarette at me. Then he said, "See, why didn't you join the INA?" I said, "No, I didn't want to join the INA. My men don't join the INA." I said, "Well, Then he said, "You must be meeting a lot of civilians. Anybody?" I said, "Yes, I've got this my second cousin." "What was he doing?" I said, "I don't know. He was here doing some business in Singapore when I arrived from Malaya. But I think he was in police, and then now he was doing some business." "Did you meet him often?" I said, "Very seldom." I said, "When I used to go to hospital, if he found out I'd gone to the hospital, he may meet me on the road." I mean, No, with you. "Must have gone to his house." I said, "Oh, yes. When we were getting passes to go out, when the Imperial Japanese Army was allowing us to give a pass to go out for shopping, I used to go and meet him in town." "Did you go to his house often?" I said, "His house is far away. I couldn't go there." "Once or twice I went there." I mean, not coming to answer. He said, "Did he tell you at any time to join or not to join the INA? I said, that is my business, and he never interfered in it. I said, he had a lot of friends in the INA. But he never forced me, he coaxed me to join the INA or not to join the INA. I'm warning off these questions. Then he said, did you meet any women? Oh, yeah. I knew that if I denied completely, I mean, if they grabbed me, then all my thing is out. So I said, yes, I met a girl. She was working at the Indian National Army Club, Indian National Army Officers Club. And I met her there. How did you go to the National Army Officers Club? As you see, they're all, we know each other, you know. And actually, I was invited by a Bahawalpur State Force officer called Jahangir. He was in the INA. Jahangir, his name was Captain Jahangir. He took me a couple of times there. And I met this waitress there. What was her name? I said, her name was Patsy Dumerisk. Was she an enemy alien? I said, yes. Why did you meet the enemy alien? Because her father was English. He was a planter. And her mother was Thai. The mistress of her father. I said, well, you see, she was an enemy alien and I was a prisoner of war. This I had already made up with her long before. As if I'm caught and they make our relationship as a point of this thing, then you do not say that I was an Indian prisoner of war. My name is Ali and I was a lieutenant in the Indian National Army. I told you so, you believe me. But she stuck to that thing till the very end. Our father was in the internment camp because he was an enemy alien, you see. He was a British. They were enemy aliens because they were born out of a Southeast Asian mother. They had a big card here, enemy alien, big red star and thing like that, and conditions. They were not contact prisoners of war. They were not contact British personnel. Conditions, you know. So quite reasonable, logical that I told her. I mean, otherwise she wouldn't have any liaison with me. She won't have any liaison with me. So I said, because of that, I told him, Ali, you lied? I said, of course I lied. Why did you lie? I said, why a man lies to a woman? A man always lies to a woman. In awkward thing, you know. He kept on writing down. And he said, all right. He said, don't worry. This took about 2.5 hours questioning. On the 26th of May, 1944. 26, a bad day. So I said, yes. He said, don't tell anybody in your camp that you have been questioned. We will not come again. You'll be rest assured. It's just normal questioning. And you don't tell your chaps in the camp at all, anything about this, at all, nothing. I said, quite right. Go, thank you very much. So I got up, I left. When I left, my knees were weak. To be questioned by bloody Kempo Thai and keep your nerve. You know, it was my youth, I think, and my little bit of thing, but today, at this age, I don't think I'll be able to be, to keep a straight face. I would have rattled. So I walked through my camp, all the men were looking, they knew that I'd gone there, I don't know, guards told them. When I got there, so Hari Badwar and Dargalka, they sat around me. Bloody Durrani was shouting, going to, innocuous things, I won't mention there, that it was my bloody fault I used to go out and face the music. Because some people should get jealous of me. As you break camp on an excuse, the other go out and they are there. So, I told Hari Badwar and Dargalka, I said, keep this fellow out of my sight. I said, he's riling me up. I've been riled enough. So we got huddled together, Hari Badwar and Dargalka and I, and Ramanaya, Captain IMS, and Salwar, Captain IMS from Pindi. I told them, word by word. Drinking sugarless tea, which I hated, but I was drinking milkless sugarless tea. So after I finished with them, he said, look, they come for you again. Because Hari Badwar and Dargarkar and three other officers with them, they were put in a Japanese cells and cages in Bangkok for 99 days, in 6 foot by 6 foot cages, two of them each. And after 99 days, they were taken out and brought to Singapore. And they joined us in the concentration camp. So he told me, he said, look, they'll come for you. And next time is your bloody cell. Either Outram Road Jail here, which is worse than that, Outram Road Jail, or any other cell. But the best thing you can do is to get out of the camp now. I said, let me think. I had a stark two possibilities. Either stay or get taken by them next time. Next time may not be that comfortable. I may break down, you see. And settle. Or take my chances and get out of the camp. I knew enough people in Singapore. But the very camp would have to find out my contacts. They already knew my contacts, you see. They would torture them and get it out of them. So they collected $600 for me. Hari Badwar, Captain Hari Badwar and Captain Dargarkar. Dargarkar was Sanders, I told Maratha. They said, look, we're giving you this money. We can't advise you. If you want to leave camp, leave camp. Get out. Take your life in your hands. Get out. Live in an island. Live anywhere you like. Just get out. So I said, let me think. By then I was really exhausted. And I was young, you know, was a little, you know. Young, youth has its advantages. One is your tremendous willpower. You can't break down easily. The other thing, when the part of decision comes, you get a bit wonky, you know, especially under those circumstances. Jungles, water, marshes, all these things like that were pretty horrendous to think about. And then your my physical shape and features. I could never pass as a Mapla or as a South Indian or as a, unless I grew beard like a Sikh, they would grab me or something like that. So all those things combined was pretty awful feelings. And then lo and behold, on the 31st of May, when I was oscillating between the two possibilities, to the 31st of May they came for me. But I'd hoped against hope, they said they will not come again for me. I had a little ray of hope. 31st of May, they came, the two Korean guards came. So I walked with them. That day I had a pair of shorts and this kind of a t-shirt, cotton thing. And I went up, got in. He was sitting there, the same chap. The moment he saw me, his face grew red, the color of beet root, red. And there was a chap, a Eurasian, sitting with him. The worst possible type of a Eurasian face that you can ever imagine. You know? Bulldogish, piggy-eyed, porky bloody hair, you know, standing up and woof, like this. I give one look at him and he scared me more than the bloody jab can put high, you know? So, at this time there was no packet of cigarette thrown at me. This was it, is just one straight. In his Japanese, he said, you have been lying. Lying. And I just looked at him and shook my head. Negative, no. And then he said, you say, Muftika, Mufti Nisar, your uncle. He told you not to join the army. He was a British spy. He read the charge sheet out to me, you see, practically. He's a British spy. He told you not to join the army. His name was Mufti Nisar Ahmad. Nisar Ahmad. So, he told you not to join the army. He was a British spy here. And you cooperated with him. You were keeping your men from joining the army. You were hiding behind all kinds of intelligence covers. I said, that's what you think. You've already made up your mind, so what can I do? And this Eurasian at one time said, listen, buddy, don't be too clever. He'll get you. After a few times, more threats from him. I said, what have I done to you? You are a Eurasian. Why don't you keep quiet? Why are you against me? He said, buddy, I'm warning you. Don't be clever. And that blighter must have understood English, you see. So he got furious. Then I was arguing with him about my cousin or my uncle. You said, he's your second cousin, he's your uncle. I said, look here, English language, in English, in Oriental relationship, yes, he's an uncle. Not uncle, he's an uncle. My father's first cousin. In English language, he's my second cousin. You are an intelligent man. How do you know I'm an intelligent man? I said, you are, aren't you? I said, if I make a wrong statement to you, give you wrong information, he's my uncle, you would hang me. I'll give you the correct English. You're talking in English. He's my second cousin. So on this I wasted quite a bit of time, shouting at him. He was shouting, I was shouting back. Now that tactic of mine was not deliberate. I got angry. And that saved me eventually, my anger. Then that subject, I said, look, you want me to say he's a spy? How can I say it? He's my kith and kin. How can I condemn him? Deliberately, yes, he's a spy. Because I'm afraid you're going to kill me if I don't say it. So I say he's a spy. Your purpose is not served. Second, I said, if I say no, he's not a spy, quite right, I'm protecting him. You can kill me, but I'll say he's not a spy. Either way, I said, you haven't got your object. Why don't you check up something else? Then this Eurasian told me, don't be too clever, buddy. You know? Oh, that burnt me. Anyhow, then question came to this girl, Patsy. Patsy, this kind of stutter name in Japanese. You know? Oh. You'll be meeting her. I said, of course they'll be meeting her. Why? I said, not for espionage, anything else, for heaven's sake. I said, I'm a young man, look at me. I'm a prisoner of war. I need a woman. I'm with a woman. I met her. We liked each other. And I told her a lie that I'm an INA officer. And that's why she was kept on meeting me. And I said, why? I said, why a young man meets a young woman? Why? For what? To play marbles? So they said, oh. I said, ah, what do you mean? Yes, of course. I said, she didn't know if she had known that I was a prisoner of war, do you think she was crazy to meet me openly in restaurants in Singapore? Do you think she was crazy to meet me? So that was it. Then arguments started off again. He said, take your clothes off. So I took my very singlet off and took my trousers down and took my underwear out. Underwear was a patchwork bloody thing I was wearing underneath. I took my sandals off, stood there naked. He said, you're afraid? I said, of course I'm afraid. Of course I'm afraid. So I looked down. And the thing that put me to shame was, the thing was very, you know.
Small.
So that hurt me more.